All right, shall I start?
Yeah.
Now presenting the award show that you've been waiting for. It's the Famicom Dojo 2013 Game of the Year Award Show. After all, Famicom Dojo has exhaustively played every single new release because that's what they do. And we're going to tell you about our favorite games. So here we go, Sean.
I haven't actually played a lot of games this year.
Oh, I haven't played many new games. Let me start again. Yes, we were born to play all these video games. Let's take we are Uno, Famicom, Dojo, Bogart. Thank you for this video games. The award show you've all been waiting for. It's Famicom Dojo talks about the slight number of games that they've played, ignoring all the ones they haven't. Award show!
Man, yeah. So if you guys listened last week, I'm sure two of the games that would be top contenders I haven't even played yet, which are Tomb Raider and BioShock Infinite. But I have played Link Between Worlds. Have you played it?
I haven't. You don't. Do you know why I haven't played it?
You don't have an American 3DS. Hashtag end region locking.
So Nintendo, I know that. Listen to our podcast, all of you, all of you, especially you, Reggie. All right, now listen, Nintendo, I can't afford to buy another 3DS right now. Well, no, wait, let me take that back. I can afford to buy another 3DS now, but instead of buying another 3DS right now, I'd rather buy 5 3DS games.
Yes.
I would give you those $200 so I could play Phoenix Wright 5 and Link Between Worlds and the Bravely Default. Why did I say Bravely? Okay. Two other games.
Oh, no.
I have a 3DS, but Nintendo, please let me give you money. Please. I want to give you money. Let me do so.
But you're like a fringe case, right? Like a U.S. expatriate in Japan. Is that even the right phrase to use? I'm sorry I even said that.
I don't know. I've heard other people say that, but I'm I don't know what that phrase actually means anymore.
Time to go to UrbanDictionary.com. I mean Dictionary.com.
Probably some weird sexual position.
It's like the opposite of missionary.
Dictionary.com. I'm like, okay, I just need to find out what this phrase means. Oh, it's a sexual position as well.
For all the kids at home.
I mean, sometimes mommy and daddy hold hands.
Hmm.
That's probably on Urban Dictionary too. Anyway.
All right.
So. So Zelda, yes.
Yeah, so I picked this up on launch day. I actually have a whole story about the guy at Best Buy trying to convince me to buy the bundle, even though I had a 3DS on me as I was waiting for someone to help me to find out if they had actually any copies in the back, because they were out, like in the front of the store. They were totally out, which actually I should probably run that back a bit and explain why I was even at Best Buy in the first place when I could just download it. I don't like downloading games, like full titles like that, like full AAA titles. I just don't like doing that.
But why?
Well, there's lots of reasons. Like, you know, transferring it to a new 3DS isn't a problem. But let's say I have kids, and I'm sure they're going to want to play these games sometime. I don't want to necessarily have them playing on my 3DS. I can just lend them a cartridge or buy them their own, more likely than not. But, you know, I have two kids, and they need to learn how to share.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I have reasons for having physical copies. Although, funnily enough, when I did get my copy, the first time I tried to save the game, it flipped out and told me that like the cartridge wasn't inserted correctly, and then I just lost all my progress. So that was fun. So that's one thing I have to worry about with digital media, I guess.
Very true.
But yeah, so I was at Best Buy, decided I was going to buy a physical copy, and I was being strong-armed into getting the Zelda bundle, which I did.
Yeah.
But I haven't opened it yet. So here I am with two 3DSs, and you have none. I mean, you know, none that can play this game in a language you understand.
I propose a solution.
Yes.
Give me one.
Just give you one?
Yeah.
Man, the last games I sent you are still in transit. I'm afraid. I hope they didn't get lost.
Game of the Year candidates right there.
Right. Yeah. So what was in that package, by the way?
That you supposedly sent me.
I have the customs form.
That would be Super Mario 3D World, which many people are calling Game of the Year.
Mm.
That would be Wonderful 101, which is divided amongst people calling it Game of the Year and Game of the Crap.
Oh dear.
Which camp you're in, and I was going to figure out which camp I'm in. And then Rayman Legends, which was should have been out in March, but came out in December. December? January? I don't even know when it came out.
Oh my.
Been in transit so long. And I think Luigi's in there too.
Yeah, New Super Luigi is in there.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's a Game of the Year candidate, but it's definitely Year of the Luigi candidate.
Which is extended into 2014, which you'd think after the death of the live-action Luigi from the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, you'd think it'd be over, but no.
I think next is the Year of the, what's her name? Princess, Super Mario Galaxy, Heron Face. Yeah, that's her name.
She's in Smash Brothers, right? You'd think I'd remember her name.
And she's in the new Mario Kart trailer. So it's the Year of the... Is it Rosalina? Rosalia?
Rosalina, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, I think it's time for her year.
Have I explained my feelings on Super Mario Galaxy?
Oh, is it that you don't like it?
It might be that. I think we did talk about this. This does sound familiar.
Those feelings to yourself.
Okay. I should talk about Zelda instead.
All right, talk about Zelda.
I don't like it. All right, let me qualify that. As a huge, huge fan of Link to the Past,
yeah,
Link Between Worlds feels like too much of a rehash to me. Even though there's like a wonderful new gameplay elements, I feel like there were no surprises. I knew where everything was in the Hyrule overworld, like, you know, all the big features. Kakariko Village is in the same place, you know, the desert's in the same place. I mean, it looks different, you know, there's a lot different about it. Although I think you end that level in roughly the same kind of area you do with the boss from the original game. But there's just, I don't know, there was something about that jump from like the NES to Super NES and the 16-bit and like all that, that Sony sound chip, you know, that made everything sound wonderful. All the they weren't sampled, but they were like, you know, really, really well put together instruments.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There was just a lot of mystery and exploration, and it really set the tone for the rest of the Zelda series. And a sequel to that I thought was going to be a really, really good idea and concept, as long as they took it somewhere interesting. And they did. But I'm starting to feel kind of, you know, crotchety and cranky in my old age at this point, I think. I just like, why couldn't they do an original Zelda game?
Let me stop you right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Game of the Year is a game you don't particularly like.
It's a really good game, though, especially if you've never played Link to the Past, which a friend of mine hasn't.
Who hasn't played Link to the Past?
Well, someone who's less than 30. I think she's like 26. Hi, Amber.
All right. So, okay. So you were disappointed with it, but you still think it's the best game this year.
That I've played.
Okay, explain more.
There's some really wonderful mechanics. So this game is actually, you know, properly 3D. This is something that Phil Bond pointed out to me that was kind of a clever device here. So it's overhead like Link to the Past is, and you recognize, you know, the gameplay right away. So you have this properly 3D world, but you're kind of experiencing it in this 2D way. Well, the big ability of the game is to be able to become a 2D painting and then move between worlds, but it's also really part of the puzzle solving aspect. So you kind of switch from being this 3D Link with a 2D view to being a 2D Link in a 3D view, because you suddenly, you know, the whole camera shifts. And then you're like zoomed in on wherever you are on these 2D surfaces, and it becomes really obvious that this is like a fully rendered 3D world. You're just experiencing it from one of these two perspectives. Yeah. And that's fascinating. It's really, really interesting. And the puzzles are really, really cool. I guess my biggest problem really is I didn't have a lot of difficulty playing it. Like there wasn't any point where I like got truly properly stumped about what I had to do, which is a weird thing to be nostalgic for, because back in the day, that's the kind of thing that make us throw controllers and quit playing games. But I was able to get through it and get through a dungeon, and there were some really clever dungeons. The Dark Palace is one of my favorite dungeons of Zelda ever. Like ever. And I really like Majora's Mask.
One of the biggest problems I've heard about this game over and over is that a lot of people say that they don't like that you can rent equipment and basically go to any dungeon you want.
They don't like that?
Yeah, a lot of people say they don't like it. Now, I don't, the people who like it say it gives it more of an open world feel, but the other people say that by not doing them in order, you're not following the narrative as was supposed to be set of the dungeons getting harder and harder and unreached. But
there's no such narrative. You can't complain about something that doesn't exist.
I suppose so.
It's not designed that way. I mean, in the few cases where that's true, there is one item that you can't get right off the bat. You can't rent it even, because he's lent it out to someone else first. So you have to get that one back.
Because a lot of the people who are saying this game's not as good as other Zeldas or whatever, that's their main complaint. So your main complaint is not that, then?
No, my main complaint is too much like a game that I already revere. Like if you know what the blacksmith can do in Link to the Past, you have an idea of what he can do in this game too.
Yeah, kind of thing.
Like there aren't a lot of surprises. You go to Death Mountain, you kind of expect what's going to happen there. You go into the Lost Woods, you kind of know what you're going to find at the end of it.
Mm.
There's nothing surprising really about this game, and like Low Rule is so much like the Sacred Realm or the Dark Realm.
Low Rule?
Yeah, so that's the other world you're linked to, is Hyrule and Low Rule, and there's like dark versions of all the different characters in that. So there's like Princess Hilda, whose kingdom has fallen into ruin, hence why the two worlds are linked now.
Okay.
But I mean, Low Rule is totally different from the Sacred Realm in Link to the Past. It's not even the same. But like a lot of the enemies are similar, you know? And of course, it's a mirrored layout of Hyrule, which is already like the Link to the Past Hyrule, so it's similar in that respect. But like the way you navigate around the world, all the dungeons, they're all different. But and some of them are kind of callbacks. So like there's the one in the woods. So there's like this wonderful moment, and I don't want to spoil this for anyone who hasn't played Link to the Past yet, where you have to find the entrance to the temple in the woods there. I think it's like number 6 or 5.
Okay.
I think it's number 6 that you get to. And those ones you do have to pretty much do in order and Link to the Past. And once you figure out how to open it, it's like this wonderful moment. You have to have a certain item and you have to use it in a certain way. And then you're like, oh, that's really cool. But there's no such like process of discovery for these dungeons, because you can rent the items that you need. But you know, maybe it's because I play this game, I know how to use them all already.
Yeah, that could be.
So there's that. But it kind of calls back, if you've played the game, the previous game before, it kind of calls back to the other dungeon because of the way that you navigate through it. There's like bushes and stuff, and you hack them away, and there's like holes, and you like fall through them to get to the different parts of the level. And that's the same between the two games, and like the same area. So that's either cool or kind of tired, depending on, you know, how much you played the game before. And this is so like a lot of that going on, but there's a lot of new stuff too. Like the thing that's the coolest about it is that, to me anyway, is that it's it calls back specifically to Link to the Past. It's like the one of two Zelda games that even exist that do that in the game story at all.
Okay.
You know, the original Zelda, like the Link to the Past was supposed to be kind of a prequel to the first Zelda game, hence the name. And yeah. then it has this backstory in the booklet that is essentially the basis for the story of Ocarina of Time, which takes place before Link to the Past. So there's been that connection all along, but like the game itself has never specified that, you know, there is another Link in another Zelda and the Triforce has been, you know, we defeated Ganon before kind of thing, you know. Well, I guess, sorry, I should take it back. I guess Zelda 2 does reference that Zelda 1 happened because you've defeated Ganon and you need to keep it from being revived kind of thing. So there's that. So I guess there's three games. But like the story of what happened in Link to the Past is like, you know, part of what this world is all about.
Yeah.
And that's cool because that almost never happens in these games. But apart from that, you know, the things that are the same, they don't call out in the same way, which I'm not sure if that's a missed opportunity or if I'm just being crotchety and old.
Just being crotchety and old. I think really you loved this game.
I did. I couldn't stop playing it, to be honest.
Yep.
Like I would do one dungeon like in you know, I wouldn't stop to play one dungeon unless I had to, you know. And then I get through it and I put it down and there one of the fetch quests is to get these 100 Mai-Mais and I got them all. You know, I looked for them. The process of figuring out how to get them all is also very interesting, so I won't spoil that for anyone, but there's this one that I just couldn't get and when I was to figure out how to do it, I felt really stupid. There are a lot of things that serve similar functions to what did in Link to the Past. So you get 10 of these Mai-Mais and you get a weapon upgrade. So, which is similar to a fairy that you can find in Link to the Past. So, yeah, it also brings in a lot of elements from other Zelda games in the interim. So like a lot of character designs are similar. Between that and like Ocarina of Time and other games since then, there's the milk bar, which was last seen in Majora's Mask. There's a Majora's Mask mask on the wall of Link's house. Like there's stuff. I know, right? Scary. There's stuff all over the place. That is like meant to talk to someone who's played this series, but they don't call out specifically in any way.
If you I'm look just, up. It's really creepy and
so I like this game a lot, but it's just I feel like there were missed opportunities. Although the game that I actually played was a lot of fun and I 100%ed it. Like I recently just finished collecting all the heart pieces and getting the last of the items I missed. There are some really clever puzzles that if you don't think of it right away, you'll just miss them going through the dungeon. So I would recommend that you definitely get the compass every time and make sure that you get all those treasure chests because it'll make your life easier down the road.
Okay.
So, you want to hear? Year? What was your game of the year?
Earthbound.
Wait a minute. Did they make a sequel or something?
Yeah, they did, but it's not out in English yet.
All right. What do you mean?
Well, okay. I know. Earthbound came out a number of years ago. What 18? Oh my God, 18 years ago?
That game is old enough to vote.
Can't be that old. Hold on. When was 1995?
Yeah, that was 18 years ago.
Wow.
Or 19 if we're into 2014 already, which I think we will be by this point.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, game of the year. Yep.
All right, what the heck? What do you mean? So I got this for Virtual Console also. That was a huge deal. It cost $2 more than a Super Nintendo title. But I paid it. But you think it's the game of the year?
Yeah, it's the game of the year. At least for me.
Okay. Did you ever play it before?
No.
Well, that'll do it.
I've played it a number of times before. Okay. My the actual cart. And I started the game on that, but I never finished it. And then... I made a half-hearted attempt to play the Japanese Super Famicom one.
Oh dear, yeah. Well, it's totally dialogue heavy. I'm sure you wouldn't get a lot of the jokes.
But that cart was cheap.
Right. Oh, sure.
Don't usually like to go. I don't usually like to go the emulation route. You know, because first of all, it's illegal, and second of all, I just don't like playing it on my computer with weird Vaseline filters and like
Vaseline filters,
right? Where, you know?
Yeah.
But I got it, and it's great. It's a great game. But why I'm considering that it can still be counted as a 2013 game is because I feel that the Miiverse really adds to the experience.
Really?
In more ways than I thought. Like, when I used to play games back when I was in junior high, you know, I usually played when I was at a friend's house.
Okay. Or
at my house where my brother was playing along with me. And so if something cool happened in the game, we could be like, whoa, look at that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, or you believe that? I just beat that vomit guy where I had just one hit point left. I was almost done. Or, wow, did you hear that crazy thing Pokey just said? You know. And, you know, we shared that moment. But most of the gaming I do right now is a solitary experience. And unless something really, really, really amazing, crazy happened that someone's made a topic about it already on a message board, or I have my smartphone with me and I take a picture and make it a post on our Famicom Dojo Facebook, which I have been doing quite a lot recently. But otherwise, I don't even, you know, it just... The Miiverse is the way that when something cool happens in the game or I did something or an accomplishment happened is a way to share that.
Okay.
Have other people, you know, kind of go in on that and see what they're doing. If you play through the game at the same time as friends of yours, you can kind of monitor their progress, see things like that. And sometimes I don't have the you know, wherewithal to figure out all the puzzles too. So I mean, it's very easy to just go, hey, where do I go next, you know? Or like, there's a lot of items in Earthbound that you don't need to complete the game that okay. are just kind of junk. I don't know what to but I'm like, here, this is my inventory, what should I keep, you know?
Sure.
It's this kind of way of playing a single player game. I'm cheating. I mean, it's clearly not a 2000, but it is the most fun I've had with a game in 2013.
I played it too under very similar circumstances. I didn't really play the original when it first came out, and I would play on my gamepad late at night, and all the, you know, the family was asleep. And I didn't really do well out with the Miiverse, but I did notice that, like, not Gabe Newell, who's the Double Fine guy, Tim Schafer. He made some posts on Twitter about like being on the bus to Threed, and I'm like, I have to know what he's talking about, you know. So then I did a similar Miiverse post when I finally got on the bus, and I was also watching Breaking Bad at the same time. So I'm not really sure. Okay. That the memories are like intertwined now. I'm on the bus to Threed, bitch.
Yeah, but from what I've heard from the Miiverse community, you don't actually need the blue meth to complete the game. A moon. Oh, it is a moon. My daughter walked in holding a cookie shaped like a moon as Daddy was talking about crystal meth. getting back to the thing. I don't know, but did you enjoy playing Earthbound?
Oh my god, yeah, it's a really great experience. I don't know if I was just too young to appreciate it at the time, or if I, cuz I'm not really a huge fan of the JRPG, but like this one like makes fun of so many of the tropes. And I do appreciate that. I didn't even know what a trope was 18 years ago. So,
what turned me off to the whole thing and made me avoid it was Nintendo's marketing campaign at the time.
I don't even remember the marketing campaign.
Their tagline was, "This game stinks."
Well, that's a good way to sell something.
Like a scratch and sniff instruction booklet that had, I don't know, Old Pizza or something. I don't even remember. But I remember
like the game itself is very kind of like Japanesey retro weird kind of, you know, kind of corny kind of, but the they were trying to do like a this game has attitude type campaign, and it just it made it seem like, I don't know, like your grandpa going to a rave. I don't know.
Oh, geez. Yeah. On one hand, it was kind of appropriate for the tone of the game. On the other hand, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
So when that came out, I just avoided it. I'm like, oh, it's like a gross out game or something. It's pretty late in the, yeah.
It's so funny how, like, you know, a large part of that game was like flouting authority. And yep. like your mom letting you go on adventures and making sure you have enough pizza before you go to, or like whatever your favorite food is before you go to bed, or like the whole thing with your dad where he's like never home and you're always calling him wherever the heck he is, and he's always like, you know, make sure you be a good boy, and like the patronizing stuff about like your mom being the real hard worker in the family or whatever. I'm just like, oh my god, there's so many layers here.
Oh, it's champagne show right there. But great game. I have two boxed copies of the Japanese one right now on my mantle.
Box?
One to keep. Yeah, one to keep and one to. One that's a little bit more beat up that I'm trying to find a good home for.
Do those cost anywhere near as much as like the loose carts do? The hundreds of dollars that the loose carts cost in the U.S.?
Yeah, the loose ones in America cost like what, $300 or something?
Yeah,
$200, and a box is like $300-$400. No, loose card here goes for around. Yeah, you can find it for $20.
Mm-hmm.
Box $30-$35.
That's really unfair.
Yeah, that's how it goes with all kinds of stuff here in Japan, though. You know what I mean?
Oh sure, yeah. If we could only read the Japanese as well and get the jokes, then it'd probably be fine. But I'm sure they're different jokes. Like I don't think they have Beatles jokes in the Japanese version. They do?
Yeah, they actually do. There's tons of music references. I mean, from what I've been able to understand, that's the thing. Humor is the hardest thing to understand to translate. Sure. Unless it's like slapstick or something, or I mean, we all know that it's funny when the guy falls down on the girl that he actually likes and he gets embarrassed about it. I mean, I hope we think that's funny. Otherwise, anime has been doing it wrong for 20 years. Sorry, that was a little off topic. But some stuff's always funny, but some of it's a little more with wordplay involved. So, I mean, I could fight my way through a fairly standard, you know, go on a quest, save the princess RPG in Japanese without any guide. But when there's humor involved and plays on words and things like that, I'm lost.
Yeah. Well, I think spending $10 on a downloadable version plus the free player's guide, it's probably worth it.
Oh, I think so.
Just a guess.
All right. Actual game that was made in 2013, that is my 2013 game of the year. I'd like to say Pikmin 3, but I haven't beat it yet, so I don't know if it's really fair to call that one without knowing how the second half goes.
Sure.
I very much enjoyed Nintendo Land. Surprisingly, although that's 2012, right?
Yeah, technically, yes.
Same with Mario, that's 2012. Wow. I don't think I've played anything.
All right, so what about your future retro for this week then? What games have you played that weren't necessarily from this year?
Have you ever played the game Parodius? Parodius?
Actually, you gave me a bunch of those for like Famicom and Super Famicom, I think, when you came in August to the States. And I had played one at MAGFest last year, the Game Boy version. So I have not actually gotten a chance to play any of the ones that you brought for me, but I did play the Game Boy one.
Really fun series, because it's just kind of a wacky parody version of Gradius.
Yes.
But Hudson Hudson must have looked at Konami and went, ooh, I want to get on some of that sweet parody shooting game action.
Oh, yeah.
And they released, have you ever played Super Star Soldier?
Yes. I think I have that on Virtual Console.
Great game. Love that game. All the Star Soldier was pretty good. Final Soldier being my favorite, I think. But they did there. They called it Star Parodia. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And it's their take on a parody of their own series, the Star Soldier series. And it is pretty amazing. You can play the game as Bomberman. A flying bomber. Or as the ship from Super Star Soldier. Or as a PC engine. Like the white... Like he's got a face on this one or whatever. And arms and legs.
Mm.
And your character boarding the PC engine or whatever. Like there's... The little flap opens or whatever, and they get inside this giant PC engine. And basically you fly around and you shoot things, and if you get the power-up that gives you a shield, it spins a controller around it that hits the other enemies. And you can upgrade your ship, so you're shooting CDs, so I guess you're a CD system now. And it's
pretty amazing. Wow.
Quite robotic. It's really bizarre. I should put a video of this. It's because you kind of got to see it in action to know what's going on. So how about yours?
Yeah. So my future retro is The Cave, which in some ways is proper retro because it's an adventure game, you know. But it's like a side scrolling platformer adventure game, and I think that's the best way that adventure games exist these days is as another genre. Like I've called Halo ODST an adventure game, which pissed off a lot of people, but it really is. It's like the structure and the story and the way things work. I mean, it's a first person shooter, but there are adventure elements. But you know, the Cave, is a Double Fine game, which makes me excited for, you know, their Kickstarter game whenever it comes out, Broken Age. Which I'm sure is going to be a different play style, but what's that?
Is it Elijah Wood in that or something like that?
Yeah. He just got recently announced he got cast in Broken Age. So I'm kind of sort of following the Kickstarter updates, but not too much. Yeah, I suppose it's kind of funny. I mentioned Tim Schafer earlier in the podcast, and now I'm talking about one of the Double Fine games. But I mean, you get to play as three of eight or ten characters. Three of eight, yeah. I think. At a time, and I want to do my second playthrough. I think we talked about this game on the podcast before, so I won't take up too much time. But it's just so fun. The narrator is hilarious. The art direction I think is great. The play is a little bit difficult because I couldn't solve two puzzles early on because I wasn't standing in quite the right spot to activate the context sensitive whatever that was going on. But I finally got through it recently, and I just love it. And I can't wait to play through it again. But I got my pile of shame to worry about. what's on your pile of shame?
By The Cave, if it was able to be played on the gamepad, there's no reason why it shouldn't be. I still don't understand that choice.
I know.
Okay, pile of shame.
Yeah.
Sean, you're gonna hate me.
Am I?
It's Mass Effect 3.
Oh man, dude! All right, didn't we talk about this already? Maybe it was offline, but like you know, you really got to play Mass Effect. Really, I mean, are you like afraid you're not going to enjoy it because you haven't played the first two games or something?
Well, okay, I started it. I was watching the opening digital comic cinema scene thing.
Yeah,
and I make choices, and I'm like, you know, I'm like a minute into this game, and I'm making choices. I'm like, oh, I just killed somebody, I guess. You know, but without any emotion whatsoever, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, it was the girl over the dude because that's
such an emotional choice when you actually have to make it in real time. And like, if you try and save both of them, you realize that you can't. Oh, God. Yeah, that's not even the same impact at all.
I'm playing this and I'm realizing that these probably were big choices. And I chose to make I don't know, friend of mine, the general, rather than like more experienced dude to the general, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But like I'm playing this first game and I'm like, oh wow, those choices really did impact things. You know, that girl is alive and here.
Yeah. So you didn't get very far past the intro then.
Thing is, I was sitting there going like, I think without the context of this game, none of this means anything, you know?
Oh dear.
And they were talking a lot. We did talk about this offline, I think, maybe even in the podcast. I don't know, but all of these, they tried to condense the first two games into about, 25 minute comic book style cutscene,
yeah.
But it made no sense to me.
Really?
It was weird. It's like, then there was this thing and he wanted, and you know, and I felt was I was sitting there and I'm like, I've just spoiled two games that probably were good games without any of the benefit from it.
Oh no. makes you wonder how Dragon Age Keep is going to handle that sort of thing for people who didn't play the first two Dragon Age games.
And essentially it's a first person shooter, right?
It's a third person over the shoulder shooter.
Which is a genre I don't really particularly like, you know?
Oh, okay.
I think it did, what they said was like RPG mode.
Yeah, if you play it that way, you don't have to worry about the combat too much. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a game that like I kind of like to complete, but I think the whole way through it, I'd be thinking like, maybe I should just play the first one.
And there's no trilogy available on the Wii U.
And getting back, oh my gosh, you owed me a steak and I forgot to eat it.
Oh man. All right, next time I see you, I owe you a steak.
Because EA just, I don't know what EA was even thinking. If they put the trilogy on the Wii U, it at least would have been a real test. But instead they put the third game on as a full price title.
Well, this I'm sure we've talked about before, though. They had the first two games on the other platforms already. They would have had to have ported it over all three games, which doesn't cost zero money. So they ported one. Well, ported the most recent one over.
But like, I don't even see why they bothered.
Yeah, I don't think they saw either.
Only maybe. Like, see, games don't sell on this platform. We are now justified in not supporting it.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other podcast. Like, literally, I think we've... my pile of shame is a Wii U game as well. I haven't played... So I sent you all those games for Wii U, and I bought some for myself as well that were on, like, a Target sale. So I got them for free, essentially. I haven't played any of them, so that's Game & Wario... new Super Luigi, which I did play a bit of it at Phil Bond's place, and Pikmin 3, which you think might be a game of the year. So tell me why I should play it, because I have not even opened it yet.
You've seen how well rendered the fruit is in that game? Some of the best next-gen fruit rendering.
So I've played the first Pikmin. I own it, and I liked it a lot, but I never got the second one. And I saw Phil playing Pikmin 3 and it just wasn't really, you know, lighting the fire under my, you know what. I don't know why that is.
What I gotta say is this is my first Pikmin game and maybe that clouds things.
Oh, you never played it before. Maybe if
you've already played Pikmin, it's kind of been there, done that. But sure. For me, it's all new and unique.
Okay.
I love getting all those little guys together and it's kind of like a turn-based game, not turn-based, sorry, a real-time strategy game,
mm-hmm.
But it's pretty vicious too. You really like kill a lot of Pikmin to get through levels.
Right? Doesn't that make you feel bad? It makes you feel terrible. Oh, goodness. Yeah, one of the reasons I got that game over other ones, partly because, you know, because of the sale, they didn't have a lot of the titles I wanted in the store, but I figured if I got Pikmin 3, my wife would want to play it.
Yeah.
So.
She didn't?
She hasn't had a chance. we sort of had a baby a little while ago.
Yeah, but babies like Pikmin 3, right? Hold on, sure. Let me ask you, baby.
Seven week olds.
Okay, Anna. What do you think of this game? You gonna play it?
That is a ringing endorsement. Oh no.
Oh, maybe. Take it. Okay.
Babies don't like Pikmin 3. You heard it here first in the Famicom Dojo podcast.
Sorry, do you want to play this? No. Oh, okay.
This is terrible. Well, I think that's time to end the show. thanks everyone for listening this week. You can leave a comment on our website, famicomdojo.tv. Let us know what you thought of the show. Let us know what your game of the year is, if you actually played more of them than we did. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Famicom Dojo, one word. And I guess until then, the dojo is...
the game of the year!
Bye, everyone.
Famicom Dojo.
And if you think that there's something that shouldn't have gone on our pile of shame, or something that should be upgraded from the pile of shame to the, what should we say, Hall of Heroes, let us know. If you think I should give Mass Effect another chance, or Sean should, you should really give Pikmin 3 another chance.
Okay.